The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hear ye, it is the Sixers Talk Podcast once again in your ear. We appreciate you joining us as always. Danny Pommel's here along with Noah Levick, our Sixers writer from NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. Noah, we appreciate you lending your expertise as always.
I appreciate you having me on, Danny. Thanks so much.
Wait, let's dive into this, man. We are one game away from the All-Star break, more than halfway through the season. The Sixers bouncing back from an ugly overtime loss against Cleveland, a game they definitely should have had, where Doc Rivers vocally criticized them afterward for lack of effort and kind of sleepwalking through things. But we saw a total different Sixers team that absolutely drubbed the visiting squad last night. When you look at the way the Sixers came out against the Pacers, particularly a team, you know, they were a little undermanned. The Sixers were without Tobias Harris for another game because of that knee contusion, but they had Joel Embiid, and they were able to execute against the Pacers team after a loss and a team they should dominate. It's a great relief to see them be able to do that to a squad. What did you take away from the game last night? Obviously, Shake and Furkan Korkmaz came off the bench and, like, erupted. But was there anything that you saw that really stuck out to you?
Yeah, I think the guys complimenting Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid just being dramatically better in that Cleveland game. Non-Simmons and Embiid Sixers combined to shoot 31%, which is pretty abysmal. And it's difficult to win games that way, regardless of how well your two All-Stars play. So that's the main thing that stuck out to me. As you said, Shake Milton, 26 points, ran the second unit, I thought, with a ton of poise and confidence. And despite, coming back from this left ankle sprain, I thought looked awfully explosive by his standards. Had a pretty impressive crossover on Miles Turner.
Ooh, the Sixers, yes, he did.
Love that one. Really shook him out of his shoes there. And it's been rare this season that Shake Milton and Furkan Korkmaz play well simultaneously. Heading into this season, Doc Rivers really liked the idea of them as this duo off the bench that could pack a scoring punch and could make plays. And that hasn't come to fruition this season. And it looked like it might be another game where Furkan Korkmaz was going to run cold. Milton hit him with a couple nice passes early in that second quarter. He missed open shots, and you figured it was a situation where Shake Milton would have to carry the Sixers bench yet again. And then Furkan Korkmaz, as he does here and there, got hot, and the Sixers will certainly love, one, a situation where their bench is the unit to carry them to victory. And then, two, the fact that they had a big enough lead that Simmons and Embiid could rest the entire fourth quarter. And these guys, the Sixers will hope will be fresh for this matchup on Wednesday against the Western Conference leading Jazz. Joel Embiid, again, Doc Rivers called him very questionable heading into the game. He just seems like, regardless of the circumstances, it's inevitable that he has some of these games where there's just this drama leading into it of, is he going to go? Is he not going to go? Watching him warm up before, he was moving at maybe like 20-30% speed. It just seemed to really be conserving his energy and not putting a ton of weight on that ankle, his left ankle, which he admitted was pretty sore after tweaking in against the Cavs. But he was excellent against Miles Turner, one of the guys potentially in this Defensive Player of the Year conversation. And despite, having respect for Turner and his skill defensively, was honest and accurate after the game and saying that's a player he's dominated throughout his career. So he only needed to play, you know, under 30 minutes last night, still put up an efficient 23 points, passed really well out of double teams, and, you know, looks like himself after that little three-game stretch where his mid-range jumpers weren't firing. He looks good regardless of this new physical ailment that he is apparently having to work through in these final couple games before the All-Star break. So a lot of positives last night. And yeah, the one that stood out as you led with, you know, that bench duo really come into play.
Yeah, coming to play at the same time, you know, Furkan and Shake hitting that on all cylinders at the same time. And, you know, there's a little bit of consternation among the fan base. You know, we do the warm-up on NBC Sports Philadelphia ahead of Sixers pregame live. And that was the question we posed on Twitter to people asking, do you feel like the Sixers supporting cast is good at status quo, or are there improvements that need to be made for them to get, you know, to this NBA plateau that they want to reach of championship level? And, you know, people were on both sides of it, but I think the majority of the people think that the Sixers are a player or two away from being able to compete at that upper echelon of the Eastern Conference or the NBA in general. But for me, for my money, regardless of how they do it, Noah, I really am focused on them securing the top seed in the East, because that allows them to avoid both in Milwaukee and Brooklyn until the Eastern Conference Finals. Because if you're assuming, you know, things kind of stay in general the way they are with, you know, the Sixers, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee being that 1-2-3, you know, whether they change positions or, you know, one of the other teams takes over the top spot or the Sixers fall back or what have you, their best chance is A, to get home court advantage throughout the postseason. I mean, that's, you know, a general thing that every team wants to do. But for this Sixers team, particularly with the way they play at home, with this stellar, you know, home record that they're sporting, you know, that plays to their strength. So if they can get the home court advantage with that top seed, which could carry them throughout the Eastern Conference, you know, playoffs, and avoid Brooklyn and Milwaukee until the finals, that gives them the best chance to win. And I think that their second half schedule is going to be a real testament to what type of team this is, how quickly this, you know, group, you know, Doc Rivers said after the game that he's still trying to figure out what sets he wants to run with that second group, what plays to their strengths, how they can, you know, complement the group by what they implement as far as the schemes and whatnot. So I think that there is really a coming together that I hope happens over these next couple of weeks, because when they come back from the All-Star break, it is daunting. You know, you look at that second week in April that Amy Fadul had pointed out to me previously. And, you know, it's a lot for this team to undertake if they're not all on the same page, running on all cylinders, you know, have come together as a unit, which, you know, Tobias being out, Joel being out, Ben being out, Shake being out, it doesn't play to that. It doesn't complement them to have, you know, so many players, and now everyone's dealing with that. But at the same time, the Sixers are a team who have this window. They're trying to capture this championship thing, and they can't overcome, you know, stars not being available like I think Brooklyn can, where, you know, we've seen, you know, James Harden lead them, they were down 29, down 29, Harden brought them back without Kyrie and KD. So I'm just focused on the Sixers continuing to play at this top level, and whatever they have to do to get there, Furkan and Shake playing together at the same time and playing well is great. But I need a lot more of that. And this Utah game will be a great measuring stick for that before the break. I hope, you know, Doc Rivers saying Tobias Harris could be available for that after he comes back from the knee contusion. But what I'm thinking, Noah. I'm really thinking that top seed is their best opportunity to get to that mountaintop.
I think that's fair. Also, the reality is, you know, the trade deadline's March 25th, and if you do make a significant move or two before then, the task on Doc Rivers' plate is even more difficult
to try to integrate whoever the new people are, right? So, great point.
We saw that in years past with Brett Brown, where they would shake up the roster, and because of that and because of lingering injuries and what have you, it seemed like, you know, the pieces just never quite gelled and never figured out exactly how to play together. Not to say that that should dissuade the Sixers from making a move if they feel it's a legitimate upgrade, but it's something that Daryl Morey and all executives across the league, I think, will have to weigh. But Joel Embiid made the point that you just did in explaining why he thought it was important to play last night and in general why he doesn't want to miss games, noting that it's a priority of his to get the one seed. I think that's going to be quite difficult to do because they have a relatively easy first half schedule. As you note, they have this very difficult like 6-game road trip that features a lot of difficult teams in the second half. And, you know, I think though that they did have that stretch in January after Seth Curry tested positive where they were super shorthanded for a couple games. I think overall, if you were to run back through their schedule, it's probably been about even or maybe even slightly advantageous to the Sixers in terms of the competitive balance factor relative to who is and is not available because of health and safety protocols. So not to say that they're a fluky team at 23-12. To me, that seems just about right as far as trying to capture how good they are. But I do think maintaining that level and also holding off a Brooklyn team who until recently was on this eight-game winning streak, that's going to be quite the challenge. And you're going to need health and you're going to need more of these types of nights from your bench. I don't think that, you know, a single game should necessarily lead the Sixers to believe, oh, our bench can get the job done in a playoff setting. I still think Furkan Korkmaz is someone that defensively there are going to be vulnerabilities there in a lot of playoff matchups. I think Dwight Howard, perhaps you feel good about him if he's going against more traditional centers, but if he's going against stretch fives, you probably wouldn't feel too great about having Dwight Howard on the floor.
If only Matisse could shoot like Furkan. Can we get that guy? Where is that guy? Can Matisse shoot like Furkan? Or Furkan defend like Matisse? That's what we're lacking.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lack of two-way players, which has been the case for a couple of years. You know, you go back to like someone like James Ennis, that's part of why he was appealing because though he wasn't exceptional on either end of the ball, he was at least competent like offensively and defensively. So it wouldn't surprise me if Daryl Morey thinks about bringing a player like that in. And you know, maybe that sort of player could.
That's why I like Glenn Robinson III last year. I mean, I know he recently got let go. Not that he fits now, but that was why I liked him because he provided some of that versatility on both ends.
Yeah, and he was a guy who played well in transition with Ben Simmons, and yeah, he definitely checked a few boxes there. Doesn't seem like his value is super high around the league right now. Mike Scott playing well, I think. Certainly changes the dynamic a little bit for the bench. He obviously started yesterday in place of Tobias Harris. But, yeah, shot for 4 for 4, actually had 4 steals, including a memorable one where he just ripped the ball from an all-star in Domantas Sabonis in the backcourt and laid it in. And he seems to be healthy now and putting a focus on hustle plays. And Joel Embiid said they really value his toughness. So who knows if he'll be here after the trade deadline, but he at least marginally improves this bench should he be playing at this level. So a lot of decisions to come in the next few weeks. And though the bench was good last night, the reality is throughout the course of the season, especially over the last 5 weeks or so, they have not been very good. And that's one of the factors that Daryl Morey is going to have to weigh here.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Noah, here we are with the Sixers team with an opportunity to avenge what happened a few weeks back where they lost to the Utah Jazz on that West Coast trip, which I think they went 2-2, was that on that West Coast trip, or 1-3, or whatever it was.
1-3, I believe.
1-3 on that West Coast trip. So Utah Jazz in their home, where the Sixers have this stellar home record. Joel Embiid, the Rudy Gobert matchup, you know, I haven't said this. I thought this for a couple of weeks. I haven't said this. Joel missed the Jokic matchup, the against the Joker in Denver. He didn't play in the Rudy Gobert game. You can't be an MVP candidate to me if you keep missing these marquee matchups. You could be a candidate, but, you know, all things considered, I just feel like those are the things that, you know, you talk about, you know, these NCAA tournament teams and, you know, resume wins and, you know, RPI and, you know, the strength of schedule and things like that. So when you're choosing who should be MVP, I think, you know, the performances they have against other marquee players matter. So for me, Joel Embiid, I need him to be in this game against for all intents and purposes, it points to the fact that he will play in this Utah game, this last game before the All-Star break, the end of the Sixers 4-game homestand. But I just want to get that out there. I feel like if you're going to talk the talk of being an MVP, then you need to be in these marquee matchups. That being said, Utah poses a problem, man. Jordan Clarkson went bananas against this Sixers team. They had no answer for him in Utah. What did he have 40? Am I right about that? He had 40 against them the last time. What will be different this time around, do you think, Noah? And I'd like to hear what you think about my thoughts about Joel and the MVP thing and not playing in some of these marquee matchups, how that might hurt him or might not.
Yeah. Firstly, I think just his presence changes the dynamic of this game in many ways. You know, last time these teams matched up, Ben Simmons was being guarded by Rudy Gobert, and he scored a career high in that game. So the game plan for both teams.
And he took that personal.
Yeah, though, to be fair, you know, a lot of his damage was against guys like Derek Favors and defenders other than Gobert. He sure was ready to score on Gobert and trying to prove a point that he's not worthy of Defensive Player of the Year. So, yeah, instead of that matchup, we'll get the Joel Embiid versus Rudy Gobert matchup, which should be a great one. My assumption is that the Sixers will do whatever they can to draw Gobert away from the hoop. So I could see Doc Rivers using Embiid in some of these delay actions where he's at the top of the key and he's kind of conducting the offense from there. And if Utah leaves him open, my assumption is the Sixers will be happy to let Embiid shoot open mid-range and three-point shots. And I could see a lot of the Sixers' offensive success hinging just on how well he makes those open attempts, because the Jazz know that Gobert is very effective as a rim protector and they'll want to keep him down there. So I could see, Embiid being used in that role, also being used in a lot of high pick and roll actions as well for the Sixers. I'm sure they will be hoping that at least some of the success from these complementary players carries over, especially if Jordan Clarkson is going to have anywhere close to a 40-point performance again. They will need their bench players to step up and chip in and knock down open shots created by Ben Simmons, driving kicks and those sort of things. So that's some of what I'll be looking for there. I would expect that we'll see a lot more minutes where it is Ben Simmons guarding Donovan Mitchell, which is always a ton of fun, dating back to the early days of their careers. I think this should be a more evenly matched game than the first one, where it felt like the Sixers had to play very well just to even be in it down the stretch. It just never felt like they really had a realistic chance to win that game, even when they took the early lead, because Utah is a great team and the Sixers were missing their best player. If Tobias Harris is available, we should see two, you know, pretty healthy teams that are at the top of their respective conferences and are giving it one final push before the All-Star break. You know, there won't seemingly be a lot of conserving of energy in this one, I wouldn't expect. So I think it should be a very high level game. Anytime the Sixers are at home, I almost just automatically think that they should be favored to win. There was a little vulnerability recently with the loss to the Cavs, but this team has lost five times at home since the beginning of last year, and they're very difficult to beat at Wells Fargo Center, whether there are or are not fans there. To your point about Joel Embiid, yeah, I think it's reasonable to say. I just think perhaps you don't want to be too harsh in how you judge that, just because I don't think he is intentionally missing these matchups. I think he's doing what he can to play through injuries. And for his MVP case, yes, it is unfortunate that he missed that first Utah game, that he missed the Denver game, etc. But I don't think at this stage it's anything along the lines of that should knock him out of the race or that should hurt his case in a major way. But I do think it's fair to say that when an MVP candidate plays well against, you know, an excellent defender or plays well against another potential MVP candidate, that you should give them credit for that. So I think he will have a chance to, as Ben Simmons did, look really strong in this matchup against Rudy Gobert and have a very impressive, you know, final impression before the All-Star break here.
Everyone wants to know, so many are curious, are we looking at a finals preview, Noah? Could this be what the NBA Finals comes down to, a Utah-Sixers series? Utah with the stellar record at the top of the Western Conference, and the Sixers sitting now 15-3 at home, sitting atop the East, although it's a much tighter race. But a three-game lead with Utah Jazz at 27-8 in the West, a lot more comfortable than the Sixers' half-game lead currently over Brooklyn. But are you feeling any mojo toward an NBA Finals matchup between these two teams?
I think it's possible. It wouldn't, if I, you know, was put on the spot and had to make a pick, it wouldn't be my pick for the team in either conference right now. But I think both teams have positioned themselves very well. But, you know, look, the Lakers are the defending champions. They have a player who has won many, many important playoff games and is playing at a great level here, you know, in his mid-30s. And I would expect that.
Who are you talking about? I can't even.
Like,
what player? I can't imagine what player you might be talking about.
Yeah, you know, a certain guy who I know you believe had an act that maybe wasn't the cleanest on Joel Embiid back in the game.
Yeah, man.
But you know, Joel Embiid hasn't talked about his back lately, and he scored 50 points since then. So. Does not appear that's lingering to any extreme degree. But yeah, the Lakers will be one of the formidable teams that you would figure the Jazz have to go through in that Western Conference. But man, yeah, they move the ball well. They have a lot of great role players. They have the sixth man of the year favorite and Jordan Clarkson, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert and Mike Conley. And that's an awfully tough team to beat. I wouldn't consider them necessarily like a lock for the finals or anything at this point, but they sure have a good chance. I think the Sixers probably would be a little lower.
Do you think they have a better chance of getting to the finals in the East than the Jazz have of getting to the finals in the West?
I think it's close. I mean, to me, Brooklyn has to prove it that they can win with this trio and that all those guys can be healthy and available and firing in all cylinders. But to me, that's the team to beat in many ways in the Eastern Conference, despite the mm-hmm. Sixers having the best record. Milwaukee is working a lot of things out and experimenting with new players and new schemes and all of that. But they, you know, they have a great player in Giannis. So, I think it's become clear that below, you know, there's a tier below that in the Eastern Conference that includes, you know, the Knicks and the Raptors and perhaps, you know, the Heat. That's a team that sure is better than their record, you know, given the way they were decimated by COVID-19 earlier this season. So anyway, yeah, finals preview, certainly possible. I wouldn't say it's likely. I'd say a lot of things have to break well for both the Jazz and the Sixers to make the finals. But there's a chance, which is part of what makes this final game before the All-Star break a really exciting one.
Just picking up on something you said previously, this, you know, is a regular season matchup in March. But does this mean more than a regular season matchup in March between the Sixers and Jazz, considering all the stuff that we've mentioned, the fact that how they played against the Sixers previously, the fact Joel Embiid missed the first matchup, you know, all things considered, are you looking at this matchup with the Jazz as more than just a regular season matchup between two powerhouses?
I think so. Yeah. I think there have probably been maybe five or six games, you know, in the first half of the season for the Sixers, where to me, it's felt like the importance is heightened a little. And there's this understanding going in that at least the external perception is going to be that this says a lot about who you are as a team. Some of the early Boston games come to mind, the game against the Lakers. This one obviously comes to mind for all the reasons we've talked about. So it's a regular season game in the end. It's not the end of the world. If they lose it, it doesn't mean the Sixers are guaranteed to walk to the finals if they win it. But it's an important game, and it will tell us a few things about the Sixers. I think, I don't know if it's going to tell us anything that we didn't already know about their all-stars or any, you know, anything along those lines. But I think that with the supporting cast, it'll be really interesting to see whether they play well in this one and whether they're able to sustain some of the production that we saw last time out.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Start college, build skills, and complete your degree with Wilmington University. 100% online options and affordable tuition makes WilmU work for you. Learn more at WilmU.edu. Well, man, we got to get down to brass tacks at some point. And the Sixers are approaching that point, though, where you mentioned the trade deadline coming up March 25th. They have nine games, including the game against Utah, before the trade deadline. And then they play the Lakers on March 25th. So let me just get the count right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Nine games before the trade deadline. And then they play the Lakers on the day of the trade deadline in L.A. Could be a really interesting, forgive me, a long night for you as someone who will be paying attention to every detail on the NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com website. But that is why we are here. That is the excitement we look forward to. I'm curious, though, of the type of player you think will fit into this lineup and complement them the most. Now, it doesn't have to be an exact name. I really am looking for the type of player. You know, I posed this question to Coach Jim Lynham last night on the warm-up of, is it an offensive threat? Is it a starter? Is it someone off the bench? And he said it didn't really matter to him. They do need another offensive threat. And to him, it wouldn't be it wouldn't matter if it was off the bench or, you know, in the starting lineup. I asked him specifically about Kyle Lowry, and he was really adamant that a guy like Lowry, who has been around the block, who has playoff experience and is hard-nosed in the way that Kyle Lowry is, would be a great player to fit that mold. Did you have a player or style of player in mind, and whether they came off the bench or were a starter? How did you see that playing out about what moves Daryl Morey might make to improve this roster so the Sixers can contend with the Brooklyns and the Utahs and the Lakers?
Yeah, I think certainly in a vacuum, Kyle Lowry is a great player who would fit very, very well on a lot of teams, this one included. The question is, ultimately, is he in fact going to be available, and what would the price be?
What would you have to give up to get him, right?
Yeah, you would figure you likely have to give up a starter like Danny Green, mostly just for salary purposes, and then it's a question of what other young players are you giving up, what pick or picks are you giving up, et cetera. And you figure
Maxey or Matisse.
Maybe, yeah. And you figure if he's on the market, the Sixers obviously won't be the only team in the mix. So, you know, there might be some bidding there. But, you know, that's down the line. And I think that potential market will materialize over the next few weeks. I thought about this a bit. We did this series we have on our website called Analytics Explained with our great video producer, Steve Graham. And for me, there are a few boxes that ideally the Sixers would like to check off in a player they would add before the deadline. So I think one of them is just someone who puts up three-point shots and ideally, you know, makes them at a decent rate. But the reality is this team is 28th in three-point frequency, and you have your star player, Joel Embiid, reiterating, you know, after back-to-back games that we need to shoot more threes, that it makes his life easier in terms of it being more difficult for opponents to double-team him when the Sixers are putting up threes. So I think that's really important. I think, secondly, guys who can play well with Ben Simmons in transition, because the Sixers have not been a great half-court offense team, but Ben Simmons, both statistically and when you just watch the games, has this incredible impact where the Sixers run a ton more when he's on the floor, and they're much more successful in transition when Ben Simmons is running the show there and being speedy, brilliant, creative, you know, all these qualities that he's established himself to be over his young NBA career. So guys who can, like a Seth Curry or Green in theory, fire away, spot up threes with Simmons, and just be comfortable playing at a fast pace. You know, I think that fast pace that Doc Rivers wanted to implement has been one of the success stories, you know, for the first half of the Sixers season. And that's something that you want to hopefully enhance with any acquisition, someone who can really play well when Ben Simmons is doing his thing in the open floor. I think also, ideally, someone who doesn't turn the ball over a ton, because turnovers have continued to be a problem for this team. So that could take the form of a starting caliber point guard like Kyle Lowry. It could also take the form of a backup type of point guard like a George Hill, someone who can run an offense and is a quote-unquote true point guard and a facilitator, and rather importantly, takes care of the ball, you know, pretty well. So those are some of the things that come to mind to me as far as boxes you would want to check. I think this starting lineup has been really excellent together in the games that they've played. You know, that number has been limited because of injuries and because of health and safety protocols. But there are a ton of encouraging signs from the starting lineup, and I assume Daryl Morey, having assembled that lineup in his first offseason, won't be rushing to break them up. That said, if there's a player like Kyle Lowry available who could slot in as a starter, and then maybe you move someone like a Seth Curry to the bench, I think that sounds, you know, appealing in theory. But my assumption is that the bench will be a higher priority than, okay, we absolutely need to acquire a starter level player to take this team to, you know, true championship contention. But
I did ask you to name names, but you mentioned while you were speaking Kyle Lowry and George Hill. They're two point guards. So do you feel like the void of those three boxes, or however many boxes you want to think that the Sixers need to check, do you feel like that void can be filled more likely with a wing player, or more a guy who can handle the ball more and maybe play off of it as well, rather than maybe a slasher or someone who can run the floor, fill a lane, et cetera?
Yeah, I think in terms of like positionally, there are probably three types of players who in theory could help the Sixers. So one of them is what we just talked about, like a true point guard sort of facilitator. Then a wing shooter, as we discussed a little bit earlier. The Sixers would love if that's a two-way player, you know, someone who can also defend. And then three, you know, a stretch four, stretch five kind of guy, just given that that is absolutely not Dwight Howard. And also given that Ben Simmons looks, I think, a lot better, and lineups, you know, tend to perform better when shooting is around him. So I think those are the types of players as far as position. As far as what I'd like, you know, weight higher, I think a lot of it just depends on Daryl Morey needing to probe for what the price is. And you know, what they would need to give up in return. For me, despite what we saw, you know, in that Indiana game, I still think maybe the most notable deficiency is just they're not being perimeter playmaking, both as in terms of setting up teammates and also guys who can get their own shots. So whether that takes the form of a point guard, whether that's a shooting guard who is a decent scorer and, you know, also a low turnover guy, you know, who knows what exactly will be out there. I think we all have our theories at this point about what's logical. And, you know, there are some early rumblings about what could be on the table, but I think it's difficult to know right now. For me, though, yeah, they could use perimeter help. And I think that perimeter help most probably would take the form of a bench player or two, although we know Daryl Morey and his knack for aggression and his knack for pulling off big moves. So we shall see if one of those is in fact available, and I'm sure he will be considering every single option.
Yeah, it's just there's a gigantic leap from where they are at 28th in the league at three-point frequency. I think they shoot about 28 to 33s a game. To 45 threes a game, like some of these other, you know, more proficient, you know, shooting teams who are, you know, shooting 45 threes per game from behind the arc. There's a big leap there. So I'm trying to that's not going to be addressed just by one person, you know, without making some substantial, you know, moves and repositioning and things like that. I don't know why I keep coming back to Zach LaVine, but his name just continues to like be bored into my head. He obviously great wing, scoring prowess, can get his own shot and all that stuff. The cost is probably outside of the Sixers parameters. So I probably need to just come to grips with the fact that that's not going to happen. But I don't know, you know, I just hope there's something for them on the buyout market for them to improve the bench and, you know, be able to make a trade. So I think there's a coming together that needs to happen that, you know, like you mentioned with Daryl Morey, that's why he's here. That's why I think Sixers fans should feel a little bit less, you know, dread about what might happen here at the trade deadline or how it might all to come together because, you know, Morey is so savvy in that regard. But I'm worried that they won't have enough assets to acquire the player that they need and they might need to settle. I am confident in Morey, but I do feel like that there's a big leap forward that I don't know that they'll be able to make with the amount of, you know, maybe they get into that middle of the pack 3-point range because they get a guy who shoots, you know, 5 or 6 threes a game. Maybe that improves their 3-point clip and opens, spreads the floor more, opens things up for everybody a bit more. But I'm curious who that might be, what that might look like. I'm resigned to the fact that I have no control, of course, over it, but I just – and I'm trying to fill in the blank and you know, I read your articles and I'm trying to piece together, you know, what I hear after the games from the coach and the players and, you know, Joel outwardly saying, you know, we got to get better behind the arc plays to the fact that, you know, Daryl Morey hears that, you know, Doc hears that. They know, you know, where they are as far as, you know, threes per game and made threes and attempts and things like that. So I'm just a little bit, cautiously optimistic, but I'm curious of how the fit and things like that. Because I throughout the season, I thought that Danny Green was a place that they might be able to upgrade. But Seth Curry's shooting slump recently, you know, and you mentioning him coming off the bench like he did in Dallas, maybe that might be the thing. But there's definitely like a potion, a concoction they need to put together of how to like pour in the right elements to get the right result of, you know, who goes to the bench, what players they bring in, how they support what they already have, but also push the team forward into being more efficient, taking care of the ball and things like that. So I'm looking for answers. Like you said, they won't come soon, but they will be coming eventually. But I don't know. Do you feel like that it's clearer that I'm making it, or do you feel like a lot of those questions are lingering and still need to come together a bit?
I think you framed it all very well. I think I rattled off, you know, three or four types of players who could help them as far as like areas of game. I listed, yeah, you know, three or four kind of prototypes positionally. So, right, you know, they're not going to check all those boxes. I'd be really surprised.
Yeah, great point.
So therefore, you have to prioritize.
I also thought they wouldn't get a new GM, a new coach, and, you know what I'm saying, all these other new players as well in the offseason. But
yeah, yeah. And that's what I think both of us and probably the Sixers front office as well struggle is, how do you prioritize? Okay, we see what we do well, but we also recognize that there are many areas where we could, you know, theoretically get better. So which is most important? Mm-hmm. What's going to be available?
What benefit assists the most against these other teams? Yeah.
Right, you got to consider some of the matchups to a certain extent. As you know, yeah, they do have the majority of their taxpayer mid-level exceptions. So they will still, you know, potentially be able to acquire a player post-trade deadline, which is, you know, something for Sixers fans to keep in mind. And yeah, you make a great point too about Joel Embiid's comments holding some weight. I mean, he admitted this offseason that he expressed that they needed to get more shooting, and they did acquire it, and it looks like they still need more shooting, and he's not shy about voicing that opinion. So I would expect that that will be at or near the top of the list as far as what they're looking for. With, you know, what they're willing to give up, that's going to be a really interesting question too, because you have some intriguing young players here, but I don't, you know, you don't have anyone who's near an all-star quite yet. You have Shake Milton, who's a very good six man. You have Matisse Thybulle, who's tremendous defensively and, you know, is in the mid-20s in three-point percentage and not doing much else to help offensively. You have Furkan Korkmaz, who gets hot here and there, but has long stretches where he's not being helpful on either end of the ball. And, you know, perhaps some of these players will be attractive to other teams in something like a hypothetical Kyle Lowry deal. And then it's incumbent on the Sixers to make some difficult decisions of how much they believe in these players to improve over the next couple of years. I think the Sixers parting with draft picks is, you know, pretty likely. We saw that at the trade deadline last season where Ump Brand gave up some second round picks to get Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burks. Something along those lines, you know, might make sense this year as well. I mean, those were two players who fit, you know, a couple of molds, you know, Alec Burks being the shot creator, Glenn Robinson III being the two-way athletic wing. You know, I don't think either of those needs have necessarily gone away, and maybe not those two players coming back to Philadelphia, but maybe something similar happens this year. And it's tough because I think Daryl Morey is someone you can probably trust not to be too desperate, just given his level of experience. Whereas, you know, I think you could argue in the past couple of years, the Sixers maybe were a bit desperate in some of their decision making. But I think also he's someone who's very big on like championship window. And he will most likely see this as an opportunity for them to contend for a championship this year. And he also won't want to completely abolish their ability to do that in future years.
Sixers fans, if you are not on the edge of your seat, I don't know what to tell you, because the team has given it all to you. We still have many more shoes to drop, so to speak, and things to fall into place, dominoes to fall. So keep it locked here on the Sixers Talk podcast for all of our perspectives and information. And Noah, we appreciate your insight as always. And when you show up, it elevates us for sure. Hey, for Ben Berry, our esteemed producer, for Noah Levick, our Sixers writer, be sure to follow him at Noah Levick on all social media platforms. Did I have that right? Is that your handle?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, at Noah Levick on all social platforms. And I'm Danny Palmels. Thanks for listening to the Sixers Talk podcast. This Jazz game will be fun. I hope you guys enjoyed as much as we will. We will see you next time here on the Sixers Talk podcast, brought to you by Wilmington University. Wilm, you work.